recently. French protesters have called for a review of France's policies towards the US-led bloc and Moscow, and denounced anti-Russia sanctions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote, crowds of protesters took to the streets of the French capital recently to protest France's policies towards Russia and the nation's NATO membership. The large-scale rally was organized by the right-wing Les Patriotes, or the Patriots Party, led by Florian Philippot, the former deputy head of Marine Le Pen's national rally. Philippot has been organizing protests dubbed the Resistance since autumn, demanding that France leave NATO and the EU, as well as criticizing President Emmanuel Macron's economic and foreign policies. Recently, demonstrators were seen carrying banners and placards that read, "France must leave NATO, Macron's impeachment, and resistance." They were also seen waving France's national flag and chanting, "Ursula, shut up," a reference to the EU Commission head Ursula von der Leyen. The protests, in which Philippot himself took part, were triggered in particular by the high energy prices that have forced small businesses across France into closure. He explained to Rapli video news agency, "We must stop the anti-Russia sanctions because that does not serve peace there, but brings misery here," he said. Photos and videos published by the politician on social media showed a large crowd marching through the streets of central Paris. French officials have not commented on the rally and provided no official figures as to the number of demonstrators. The French media mostly ignored the event as well. According to the website of Les Patriotes, similar rallies were held in September and October. The protest also occurs as neighboring Belgium saw a massive demonstration joined by over 16,000 people in Brussels earlier this week. Thousands took to the streets in the Belgian capital recently to demand a freeze on spiking energy prices and better pay amid high inflation in Belgium and the EU. Gas and electricity prices have skyrocketed in Europe as the economic strain caused by the COVID-19 was further aggravated by the fallout of EU sanctions on Moscow over the conflict in Ukraine. Russian energy supplies to the bloc were then further reduced amid the EU's attempts to rid itself of Moscow's energy imports altogether. Meanwhile, Modern Diplomacy wrote, the French Le Monde has published an article whose author argues that for the EU economy, Biden has proved worse than Trump. Biden has been successfully securing unilateral advantages for his country, playing on domestic fears and the years-long European beliefs. On behalf of the present president, the American establishment makes it clear that the attempts to deal with it on an unequal footing are perceived as an encroachment upon the interests of the US. The stakes for the EU are becoming even higher every time. After yielding to pressure from Washington, Europeans risk irreversibly losing their position as one of the world's top economies. The defeat of Trump and the arrival of Joe Biden caused a wide-ranging relief across the EU and equally high expectations. Scared out of their wits at Trump's rhetoric, Europeans welcomed the return of a president that represents traditional establishments. Biden announced plans to preserve America's key foreign policy commitments. However, Washington continued to send signals that sounded alarming for Europe. For instance, future Secretary of State Antony Blinken repeatedly warned the EU against striking an investment deal with China. After the deal in question was signed at the end of 2020, Biden's representatives expressed deep disappointment. America is providing itself with unilateral economic advantages even through a sanction-based policy. After the escalation in Ukraine hit a new level, at the end of February, European political circles have been enthusiastic about all Biden's initiatives on anti-Russian sanctions. Washington has been relentlessly enhancing its rhetoric about the need to contain Russia, making the EU intensify sanctions against Moscow. However, new restrictions on the supplies of raw materials and trade with Russia inflict tangible damage on old world producers, many of whom include the key competitors of American companies. At present, EU countries have to buy more and more of the costly liquefied natural gas of the US instead of a considerably cheaper analog from Russia. As a result, amid the soaring cost, there have been regular reports on the transfer of European productions to the US.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
An Israeli settler has run over two Palestinian brothers near the city of Nablus in the north of the occupied West Bank, making them the latest victims of Israeli settler crimes. According to Palestinian media, Mohammad Mutair and his brother Mohannad had stopped their vehicle by the side of the road near the Zatara military checkpoint south of Nablus to fix a flat tire. It was then that an Israeli settler hit the siblings, who were traveling around with their family members at the time, and fled the scene. The victim's relatives said that 28-year-old Mohammed was killed immediately after being trampled on by the settler, while his brother, 24-year-old Mohannad, was seriously injured in the same accident and was later announced dead due to his injuries. Reacting to the atrocity, Hazem Qasem, a spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based Hamas Palestinian Resistance Movement, said the settlers are escalating their aggression against Palestinians. He added that the formation of the new right-wing government in Israel has apparently emboldened settlers to ratchet up their crimes against Palestinians. He described the incident as a new episode in the series of, quote, Zionist terrorism under the protection of the regime's police and army, saying this crime must be answered by increasing the resistance in the West Bank. Israeli occupation soldiers and settlers have been noticeably escalating their attacks against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank and other areas, in an attempt to forcibly expel Palestinians from their lands and make way for expanding Israeli settlements. Israeli forces have also been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus, where new groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 children, in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs described 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians since 2005, when the UN started to keep a tally of Palestinian fatalities. The World Body says Israeli forces have shot dead 19 Palestinians, including 3 children, in different incidents across the occupied territories between November 22nd and December 11th. In addition to the killings, Israeli forces have blocked the main entrances of several villages across the West Bank, disrupting livelihoods of thousands of Palestinians. Scores of Israeli settlers, guarded by police, have stormed the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds under the pretext of celebrating Hanukkah holiday. Earlier, the Israeli police stormed Al-Aqsa and forcibly expelled Palestinians stationed inside, paving the way for the illegal settlers to storm the compound. Israeli forces deployed heavily inside Al-Quds Old City in preparation for securing the settlers' incursions and preventing Palestinians from entering the mosque. Israeli settlers intend to storm Al-Aqsa for 8 days to celebrate the so-called Hanukkah, also known as Festival of Lights, which extends from December 18th to December 26th, as settler groups promoted the storming by announcing free transportation for its members. Israeli groups and extremist settlers had previously called for massive incursions into the holy site during the Hanukkah holidays. Hardline Israeli officials and settlers regularly stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city, a provocative move that infuriates Palestinians. Settlers' incursions on Al-Aqsa Mosque frequently trigger clashes that leave casualties among Palestinians. Such acts of violence even led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime in 2021, during which the regime forces killed at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the latest raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli settlers. Hamas says such incursions are provocative and very dangerous. The movement has urged Palestinians to mobilize immediately in defense of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance movement stressed the Palestinian nation will make sure to protect the mosque under any circumstances, warning Israel of the consequences of raids on the holy site. The Jewish visitation of Al-Aqsa is permitted, but as part of a decades-old agreement between Jordan, the custodian of Islamic and Christian sites in Al-Quds, and Israel in the wake of Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, non-Muslim worship at the compound is prohibited.
When it comes to Peru, the country is unraveling quickly. Just last week, Peru's president, Pedro Castillo, was removed from office. His charge, rebellion, which came after he announced that he would shut down Congress and install a government of exception. This occurred just before he was due to face an impeachment vote. Then came his arrest, charged with allegedly breaching constitutional order. But these accusations were not enough. He was also accused of an attempted coup. Enter Castillo's vice president, Dina Boluarte. She also accused the president of a coup attempt. And just a few short hours later, she was sworn in as the new president, becoming the first female head of state in Peru's history. Boluarte called for a political truce and the installation of a national unity government. No surprise that the coup set up mass protests all across Peru. This is while the unelected government ordered a violent crackdown, with police to have killed numerous protesters. Yet things have moved rather too quickly, leading one to conclude that there may be foreign hands at play, in this instance, from the U.S. For example, just 2 days before a coup against its elected President Castillo, the ex-CIA agent and U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's defense minister. And there are reports that Peru's defense minister, who's a retired brigadier general, ordered the military to turn against Castillo. The U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's unelected leader, Dina Boluarte, and reiterated Washington's wholehearted support. Kenna, in another post, tweeted, "The U.S. categorically rejects any extra constitutional act by President Castillo to prevent Congress from fulfilling its mandate." This all showed that the U.S. government had staunchly supported Peru's unelected administration. In a statement, the U.S. State Department stated, "The U.S. commends Peru's institutions and authorities for safeguarding democratic stability. Troubled by violent demonstrations and reports of attacks on the press and private property, the U.S. recognizes Dina Boluarte as the country's president." When Castillo moved to dissolve Congress, he cited Article 134, and he made it clear that it was only going to be a temporary closure. He said new congressional elections would be held as soon as possible. Yet the U.S. ambassador to Peru failed to mention Article 134 of Peru's constitution, which states, "The President of the Republic is authorized to dissolve Congress if it has censured or denied its confidence to two councils of ministers." The dissolution decree contains the call for elections for a new Congress. The U.S. Ambassador Kenna ignored all of this. Instead, she declared, "The U.S. emphatically urges President Castillo to reverse his attempt to close Congress and allow the democratic institutions of Peru to function according to the Constitution." By this, the CIA veteran meant that Castillo should simply allow the anti-democratic Congress to launch a coup against him. The U.S. Embassy in Peru subsequently published an official statement echoing exactly what Kenna had said. This was Washington's green light for Peru's right-wing-dominated Congress to overthrow President Castillo and for the state security services to arrest him without trial. So it's no surprise there have been headlines that read, "The U.S. egged on the coup in Peru." The move by Pedro Castillo to dissolve Congress ahead of a third impeachment motion seems to be the result of a pressure campaign with support from the U.S. But why would the U.S. be interested in a coup in Peru? One motivation behind the U.S. could be in Peru's natural resources. Peru has a wealth of mineral resources like copper, iron, lead, and zinc. Gold and silver are also found extensively. On the other hand, the U.S. has been against the group of left-wing presidents who have taken over in Latin America in what's called the pink tide, with many not leaning so much towards the West's economic and financial system, like from the U.S. After all, they did not reap the rewards that a Western capital system offers, which has turned out to be just a mirage. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has even said that it wants to move away from the dollar and decrease the dependency as much as possible. The CIA has organized many coups against democratically elected left-wing leaders in Latin America, from Guatemala's President Jacobo Arbenz in 1954 to Chile's President Salvador Allende in 1973, not to mention the attempts to remove the former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez.
Japan is allocating $320 billion in an effort to build up its military, a move that would be unthinkable under previous administrations. But now, under the Liberal Democratic Party led by Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, surveys say the budget has the favor of over 70% of voters. The military developments include extending the range of Japan's missiles, stockpiling of spare parts and other munitions, reinforcing logistics, developing cyber warfare capabilities, and cooperating more with U.S. and other like-minded countries. The extension of the range of Japanese missiles is only meant to be able to reach China, if the need were to ever arise, as there is no other reason to extend the range to around 1,000 kilometers. The reason why Japan feels the need to advance its missile technology is the escalation of tensions in the Indo-Pacific region. North Korea has, on multiple occasions, tested intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads, one of which landed a little too close for comfort to Japan. The China-Taiwan tensions are also cause for concern for Japan, as a potential military escalation could put Japan in danger as well. This is because of the large number of troops and massive amounts of supplies that the U.S. has stationed in Japan, which they would most likely take advantage of in case of an escalation with Taiwan. Here's what Prime Minister Kishida said with regards to the military build-up plan.
We can feel a rapid increase in the severity of the security environment around our country. In countries and the regions surrounding our country, a strengthening of nuclear and missile capabilities, a rapid military build-up, and attempts to unilaterally change the status quo through power are becoming more pronounced.
Kishida also emphasized on the issue of China as a challenge to its security. He said, China's current external stance and military trends are a challenge to our country's peace and security, the securing of global peace and stability, and the enhancement of international order based on the rule of law. To which Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin responded by saying, Japan disregards the facts, deviates from the common understandings between China and Japan, and its commitment to bilateral relations, and discredits China. Japan even believes that Russia is a threat to its security, albeit indirectly. Tokyo sees Russia's war in Ukraine as a dangerous precedent that might encourage China to carry out a similar operation in Taiwan and cause unimaginable disruption to world trade. By taking stances against North Korea, China, and Russia, Japan must look to the US and South Korea as its allies. $320 billion. Once the budget is injected into Japan's military, it will bump up Japan's ranking among the top military spenders in the world from 8th place all the way up to 3rd place, just below the US and China, even higher than Russia during a time of war. And this amount of expenditure is going to hurt Japanese economy. Kishida's plans will double Japan's defense outlays to about 2% of the country's gross domestic product over the next 5 years. It would also mean that Japan's defense ministry will now have 10% of the country's entire annual public spending. In the document that outlines the plan for the military expenditures, what is not included is how the money will come about. It's unclear whether the government will have to raise money through tax increases or whether it will borrow the money. But if we look at the reason behind this unprecedented amount of spending on military by Japan, that is known for its pacifist constitution, we will realize that if not for the US's recent provocative actions, Japan would not deem its security threatened. North Korea's ICBM missile tests only came about as a result of US provocations, and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has mentioned this on multiple occasions. With regards to the issue of Taiwan, if not for the meddling of the US in Taiwan's affairs and the breaking of the One China policy that the US had previously agreed to, China would not have conducted the biggest military exercise in its history. If not for the constant eastward expansion of NATO, spearheaded by the US, the war in Ukraine would also not have happened, and Japan's concerns over Russia encouraging China to also attack Taiwan would never come to be. It's almost as if Japan's alliance with the US is costing them more money than it's bringing in. And that is completely disregarding the security risks that this alliance has brought upon the land of the rising sun.
Iran has wrapped the European Union over anti-Tehran measures taken by the Council of the European Union. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian denounced, quote, certain political shows that have been put on display by the Council under the pretext of defending the issue of human rights. The European Council has imposed a slew of fresh sanctions against Iranian natural and legal entities. According to a statement issued by the EU foreign ministers, 20 individuals, along with one entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, have been sanctioned over alleged human rights abuses. The bloc has also slapped sanctions on 4 more people and has many entities blacklisted over Tehran's alleged drone supplies to Russia. The bloc's new sanctions include asset freezes and travel bans to the EU. The ministers condemned what they called the widespread use of force by the Iranian authorities against protesters. The European Union last month imposed sanctions on a number of Iranian institutions and individuals, including the 24-hour English-language press TV news channel, over alleged rights violations following the recent foreign-backed riots in the country.
In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the riot.
Foreign-backed riots have hit various Iranian provinces since 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini died at the hospital on September 16th, 3 days after she collapsed at a police station. An investigation has attributed Amini's death to a medical condition rather than alleged beatings by the police. The violent riots have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country. In the last 2 months, the terrorists have set fire to public property and tortured several Basiji members and security forces to death. Western states have been hyper-aggressively pushing the regime change agenda in form of hybrid war, making a sheer mockery of international law. Authorities in the US and the EU have openly and brazenly instigated rioters in Iran through official and unofficial channels. Iran's intelligence ministry has said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest.
Online, the MEK organization that's funded by and supported by NATO, they've been teaching people how to make Molotov cocktails, how to use weapons, and they've been attacking police bases, military bases, and also we've had terrorist attacks alongside the Pakistani border, in the no man land in Pakistan, and also in northern Iraq from Iraqi Kurdistan.
Iran says its enemies have waged a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic to weaken national solidarity and hinder the country's progress. Officials say huge amounts of weapons have been shipped into the country by Western and regional intelligence services to carry out terrorist attacks and conduct extensive psychological operations in order to stoke dissatisfaction amongst the Iranian people and make them accuse the Iranian administration for the growing insecurity.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Most Americans do not accept President Joe Biden's explanations about the real reasons behind the increasing cost of living and say his administration has performed poorly in managing the U.S. economy. The U.S. president claims that Russia is responsible for the increase in the price of oil, gas, and foodstuffs, but new opinion polls show the weak performance of his administration and Biden's misguided domestic and foreign policies have created economic hardship for the American people. we take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Wall Street Journal has covered this story and tells us more. The latest Wall Street Journal poll shows a majority of voters think the economy will be in worse shape in 2023 than it is now, and roughly two-thirds say the nation's economic trajectory is headed in the wrong direction. The survey conducted between 3 and 7th of December suggests, despite U.S. official claims and statistics that the economy is in good shape, and that inflation is under control, their figures and claims haven't altered the way many feel about the risk of a recession, something many economists have forecast as likely. Republican poll participant David Rennie, a 61-year-old retired executive with the Boy Scouts of America who lives in Shelton, Connecticut, said, "I just think we are headed toward a recession, and it could be a pretty big one. Interest rates are skyrocketing, and that's going to take us down." The U.S. Federal Reserve on Wednesday, 14th of December, approved an interest rate increase of 0.5 percentage point and signaled plans to keep raising rates at its next few meetings to combat high inflation. The move reflected some moderation after 4 consecutive increases of 0.75 percentage points each. Economic pessimism is strongest among Republicans, with 83% expecting the economy to worsen. Slightly more than half of independents feel that way, while 22% of Democrats feel that way as well. Democratic pollster John Anzalone, who conducted the survey with Republican pollster Tony Fabrizio, said, "Our economic diagnostics have become partisan. If there was a Republican president, we might see the reverse." Tony Fabrizio said Democrats aren't paying as much of a political price as one might expect for so many people having negative feelings about the U.S. economy. He said, "You would normally see that translate into big bad news for the Democrats. Younger voters are more pessimistic about the economy's prospects next year than older voters. Roughly 6 in 10 of those aged between 18 and 34 expect it to be worse over the next year, while 42% of those aged 65 and older feel that way." Democratic poll participant Kendra Lewis, a 38-year-old business consultant and entrepreneur who lives in Fayetteville, Georgia, said she is already seeing some of the small business people she works with act as if they are in a recession. Kendra Lewis said, "I've seen a drastic contraction in what people are willing to spend. When entrepreneurs are scared to invest and expand, that trickles down to a lot of other things in the economy." Lewis said even if inflation slows to a more normal level, she expects it will take some time to undo some of the trauma people have experienced in the economy during the past year. She said, "It takes time for consumer confidence to be rebuilt." The website Bankrate has also covered the same story. Whether it's the hottest inflation in 4 decades or this year's abrupt end to the lowest borrowing costs ever, Americans' finances haven't had it easy in 2022, and most aren't expecting their wallets to feel any better in the new year. According to a new Bankrate poll, about 2 in 3 or 66% of the American public do not expect their personal finances to improve in the new year 2023. That total includes 36% who expect their financial situation to remain about the same, along with 29% who expect their finances to be worse. Slightly more than one in three Americans, or 34%, have hoped that their personal financial situation will improve in the new year. The findings highlight next year's rocky economic outlook, as experts warn of an increasing likelihood of a recession amid the Federal Reserve's rapid rate hikes. High inflation on everyday essentials such as gasoline, housing, and food is also biting into Americans' purchasing power. Also, Americans had varying degrees of concern about their personal finances heading into 2023. Of the 29% expecting their finances to get worse in the new year, 18% see their finances getting somewhat worse, while 11% are bracing for their finances to worsen significantly. White Americans are more than twice as likely as Black Americans to expect their finances to get worse next year, 32% compared to 15% respectively, while 27% of Hispanic Americans expect their wallets to worsen. At the same time, 51% of Black Americans expect improvement versus 30% of white Americans and 37% of Hispanic Americans. The Americans who do not expect their finances to improve next year are overwhelmingly pointing fingers at inflation. More than three-fifths, or 63%, say continued high inflation will be the reason their finances do not improve, more than any other category, including the work of elected officials, 29%, stagnant wages or reduced income, 27%, and changing interest rates, 25%. The MarketWatch website has also covered the same story. A Gallup opinion poll shows over half of U.S. households say inflation is causing them hardship, a figure that has barely changed throughout the past several months. According to the opinion poll, which was conducted among more than 1,800 American adults during November, 55% of Americans said rising prices have created financial problems for their household. Its results were published on Tuesday, 13th of December, a month after the Labor Department announced that prices across the country had shot up 7.7% compared to the previous year. The Labor Department put the increase down to higher costs of shelter, food, and energy. Gallup said the November figure had essentially remained unchanged since last August. Jeffrey Jones, senior editor at Gallup, said in a post for the polling firm's website, "The fact that Americans' self-reports of financial hardship are leveling off rather than declining, is likely to reflect just how much prices have risen over the past year and how much further inflation needs to subside before most Americans no longer feel burdened by it." Jeffrey Jones added, "However, the figure was notably higher than the 45% of Americans who said they were in the same boat a year ago." The survey also found that 77% of lower-income respondents were financially suffering from price increases, compared to 60% of middle-income adults and 42% of upper-income adults. It identified lower-income families as households, most of whose money goes towards rent and have a hard time paying their bills. Of the lower-income respondents, 28% said they were experiencing severe financial hardship, which Gallup described as affecting one's ability to maintain your current standard of living.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of arrogant powers policies and recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. Now, what is the motive of these foreign governments? My perception is that they feel that the country is progressing towards achieving a comprehensive power, and they cannot tolerate this. They have made plans. They have designed plans to close down the universities, for the youth to be preoccupied, for the state officials to have new things to deal with, and to create issues in the northwest and southeast of the country. These are all preoccupying. These are all schemes being made and carried out to stop the country's progressive movement. But they are mistaken about both the northwest and the southwest. I've lived with the Baluch people. They are some of the most loyal ethnicities to the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic. The Kurds are one of the most advanced Iranian ethnicities. They care about their homeland. They care about Islam, and they care about the Islamic system. The enemy's schemes will not work, but they work on them anyway. These things show the enemy's true intentions. This is the enemy that claims in its diplomatic statements that they do not want to attack Iran. They do not want to change the system of the Islamic Republic. They are not our enemies, and they are with the people of Iran.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The inner reality of that enemy is what we are saying. The inner reality of this enemy is conspiracy, creating riots, disrupting the safety of the country, and exciting those who can be easily excited to go into the streets. This is the enemy's inner reality. They are not just against the Islamic Republic. They are against Iran. The U.S. is against a strong Iran and against an independent Iran. The Islamic Republic is not the only issue they are fighting. Of course, they have a strong, deep animosity towards the Islamic Republic. There is no doubt about that. But even without the Islamic Republic, they are against an Iran that is strong. They are against an Iran that is independent.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. Done for me through all my years I've been
from east to west. Throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The British government is facing a new challenge in its health centres in the midst of numerous crises caused by the coronavirus pandemic and the exit from the European Union. According to recent estimates, patients sometimes wait 11 hours outside of hospitals or in ambulances to receive emergency services. Another major problem for patients is prolongation of the diagnosis period of their disease in diagnostic test centres such as laboratories, radiology, CT scans and MRI scans. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British news reporter The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. Reports suggest that more than 184,000 patients in England and Wales are waiting 3 months or longer for key diagnostic tests as clinicians warn some NHS services are close to failure. Patients should not wait more than 6 weeks for tests under rules set out in the Health Services Constitution. But children in some specialist hospitals are among those waiting longer than this, with doctors and radiographers warning that they're already working at overcapacity. Medical staff warn that clearing the backlog in CT and MRI scans alone would require a 10% rise in staff numbers. According to an analysis of October's waiting times for diagnostic tests, more than half of all patients who had been referred for tests had been waiting 6 weeks or longer at some of England's biggest NHS trusts. The National Health Service aims for fewer than 1% of patients to be waiting 6 weeks or longer. At the end of October 2022, 426,003 patients had been waiting 6 weeks or more in England for 15 key diagnostic tests and procedures, which was 27.5% of the total patient numbers waiting. The figures also showed the number of patients waiting 13 weeks or longer was 184,187. NHS medical staff carry out more than 2 million diagnostic procedures in England each month for a range of purposes, including diagnosing cancer, identifying heart disease, and establishing the extent of musculoskeletal injuries. A briefing published recently by the Imaging and Oncology Forum, which includes the Society of Radiographers and the Royal College of Radiologists, warned that diagnostic imaging services were being brought close to failure. It stated, "Overcapacity working threatens patient safety, is harming healthcare professionals, and is challenging service quality." British newspaper The Observer has also covered the same story. Dr. Catherine Halliday, president of the Royal College of Radiologists, said the data shows that more than 184,000 patients in England are waiting 3 months or longer for key diagnostic tests and are concerning but not surprising. Dr. Catherine Halliday said, We have known for some time that shortages in the diagnostic workforce are a core driver behind the NHS's slow recovery from COVID-19 and are limiting our ability to give safe and effective care. Today's statistics are yet more evidence of that. She noted further, NHS staff have been working over capacity for years, but there simply aren't enough of us. To clear the backlog of patients waiting for CT and MRI scans within a month, the National Health Service in England would have to employ 390 radiology consultants, the equivalent of a 10% increase in the current workforce. Dr. Halliday added, "We've had years of underinvestment in the NHS workforce, so we hope the government will soon publish a fully funded workforce plan, which would reassure patients and doctors that those backlogs can be tackled, targets can be met, and patients can be diagnosed in the earliest possible time." A National Health Service spokesperson claimed, "Despite the ongoing pressures on services which are exacerbated by flu hospitalizations, the issues in social care where we cannot discharge patients who are ready and the record numbers needing accident and emergency care, NHS staff continue and have powered through to bring down some of our long waits for care, including tens of thousands more people getting the diagnostic tests and checks that they need in October compared to the previous month." An analysis by the Observer of the latest waiting times for diagnostic tests at the end of October found that patients at university hospitals of Leicester NHS Trust face some of the longest waiting times in the country. The most recent figures show 14,437 patients at the Trust had been waiting 13 weeks or longer for key diagnostic tests. At Great Ormond Street Hospital for Children NHS Foundation Trust in London, 194 patients had been waiting 6 weeks or longer, and 30 patients had been waiting 13 weeks or longer for diagnostic procedures. There are waiting times of several weeks for some children for MRI scans and echocardiograms used to assess heart structure and function. At some of the country's biggest NHS trusts, more than half of all patients referred for tests had been waiting 6 weeks or longer. These include Lancashire Teaching Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, United Lincolnshire Hospital NHS Trust, and York and Scarborough Teaching Hospital NHS Foundation Trust. British newspaper The Telegraph has also covered the same story. British MPs have warned hundreds of thousands of cancer patients in England face being diagnosed late in the coming years as they condemn the government's failure to tackle the NHS staffing shortages that risk survival rates going into reverse. In a recent 52-page report on cancer services, the House of Commons Health and Social Care Committee said, "The absence of any serious attempts by ministers to fill gaps in the cancer workforce was jeopardising efforts to improve survival rates." MPs added that without action, 340,000 patients between 2019 and 2028 will be denied an early diagnosis, which could mean the difference between life and death. The verdict came after an inquiry by MPs found there was no detailed plan to address shortages of clinical oncologists, consultant pathologists, radiologists and specialist cancer nurses. MPs discovered, despite claims the NHS protected cancer services during the pandemic, 3 million fewer people in the United Kingdom were invited for cancer screening between March and September of 2020. The report added, between March 2020 and March 2021, 326,000 fewer people in England received an urgent referral for suspected cancer. About 4.6 million fewer key diagnostic tests were carried out. Witnesses told MPs that they had been forced to ration treatment and likened working in cancer services during the pandemic to working 25 years ago. MPs also highlighted that because of pressure on general practitioners, family doctors may not spot as many potential cancer cases. They said that urgent cancer referrals have begun to recover, but waiting time targets are being missed, which risk greater numbers of late diagnoses. The MP said the best way to improve survival rates would be to diagnose more cancer at an earlier stage.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Saudi coalition has seized another fuel ship bound for Yemen, keeping it from reaching the port of Hodeidah to unload the much-needed fuel. Military officials based in Sana'a confirmed that they have not ruled out the military option against the Saudi coalition in order to prevent what they call acts of piracy in the Red Sea.
I can confidently say that in the near future or in the days ahead, we will all witness an escalation of military operations, and perhaps we are going to see a one-of-a-kind military operation that will target the vessels in the Red Sea that are pirating Yemeni fuel ships which have received the necessary permits from the United Nations. The Yemeni army could also target the oil industry in both Saudi Arabia and the UAE. I can certainly assure you that the status quo is going to change, as military officials' strategic patience is wearing thin.
According to the spokesperson for the Yemeni petroleum company, Isam al-Mutawakkil, all Yemeni fuel ships are forced to sail on a path crossing near the Saudi Arabian coastal area of Jazan, where an American base is believed to be operating.
All Yemeni fuel ships bound for Yemen have been seized and fallen victim to these acts of piracy near the Saudi coastal area of Jizan, where they are searched under American supervision. This is happening despite the fact that they are already being inspected by Djibouti. Therefore, we should hold accountable the Saudi and American coalition along with the United Nations, which is allowing these acts of piracy that are causing great harm to the Yemeni people.
Yemeni military and political personnel have expressed that a peaceful solution will be impossible if the humanitarian situation continues to deteriorate due to a limited supply of fuel and diesel. Tensions are also on the rise in the strategic province of Hodeidah, where coalition forces are reportedly building up.
If there is not going to be a peaceful or political solution, then perhaps the solution is going to come through the barrel of our rifles in order to stop these aggressor nations which are taking orders from their American and Zionist masters.
As 2022 draws to an end, so do all efforts for a peaceful solution. However, as the humanitarian situation continues to grow worse by the day in Yemen, the military option could be the only option left on the table.
The Yemeni government based in the capital Sana'a has proved that it has the military capability to hit long-range targets in land and at sea. However, it is still keen to reach a political solution and end the conflict that has taken the lives of tens of thousands of innocent people. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
About 70 officials and representatives of think tanks and research centers from 36 countries are in Tehran to attend the Tehran Dialogue Forum 2022. The initiative, dubbed Neighborhood Policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, is the third of its kind, and this time it focuses on regional friendship and trust building.
The main message of this forum is boosting regional cooperation and dialogue. We always welcome dialogue. particularly when it comes to finding solutions to the challenges that we face.
The keynote speakers of the forum, former Iranian Foreign Minister Kamal Kharrazi, the former Prime Minister of Iraq Adel Abdel Mahdi, the Nicaraguan Foreign Minister